I'll tell you what, this is how we love to have our Fridays around here. We're joined by, of course, the hero of herbs. He is the nurturer of natural medicine and the king of the coalfields.
Wow.
Dennis Stewart, good afternoon.
That. I can't believe that verbiage.
Let's pull that out of thin air, mate.
That's great, mate. The last time I heard something like that was in the book on Western herbs, where I was referred to as the godfather of Australian herbal medicine. But you're right up on that today, mate.
Well, that's wonderful phraseology. I looked at that and thought we can go one better. But have you had a great Easter last week?
I did, fairly relaxed.
Excellent, yeah, excellent.
Fairly relaxed.
Now, this week we'll be picking up a topic that was a continuation from a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Having a look at winter conditions, sort of.
Sure. Mm. We took up that topic and we looked at a number of factors that I'd like to review and finish off the subject. We weren't able to complete it due to listener interest in the program, but today I want to quickly go over the things which I present as useful lifestyle modifications to help us cope with the challenges of wintertime, particularly in building up a degree of resistance to respiratory conditions, particularly in the ageing.
All right, we look forward to some of that, plus your calls if you have a health question for Dennis today. Looking at those lifestyle modifications, look at things we can do to prepare ourselves for winter.
And look, it's very appropriate that we're talking about that topic today. It's almost as if a prophecy has come true. That's a big call, isn't it?
Well, we did start this when it was about 40 degrees a couple of weeks ago. So,
but look, what we did the last time we met was take on board some suggestions that I've made over the years on this program about things that we can do, not in conflict with mainstream medicine at all, but things we can do to lift our game as far as improving resistance to many of the things that will occur very, very much so and very dangerously in wintertime, particularly in the elderly. And I'm one of those. So the simple things which I've proven over the years, both in recommending these things to my patients and getting feedback from listeners that have put into practice some of these simple concepts. The first thing I touched on the last time we met was the importance of taking on board the simple concept, so simple but yet so sound, both from a practical and from a theoretical and philosophical perspective, and that is the inclusion into our predominantly Anglo diet of what we would call warming herbs, which inevitably mean taking on board some of what our ethnic compatriots have already done and have always done, and that is use herbs that are a bit spicy, that herbs that are warming to the system, and the warming effect on the body has physiological consequences. I will not go into that in detail, but a herb like cayenne, a herb like ginger, and ginger is a good alternative for people that would find cayenne a bit too strong for them. Ginger is particularly useful as a herb at this time of the year, brought into our diet for addressing problems associated with the respiratory system. Let me emphasise that ginger taken regularly across the day, particularly in wintertime, has a physiological explanation behind it as to how that gives the respiratory system better resilience in the face of infection. So that was the first thing. Look at what we're eating. Don't get stuck around the stodgy Anglo diet, which at the best is stodgy, cold, lacking in vitality, and behind a lot of the diseases that we've brought with us from the old country.
Are you saying like a pie or two is stodgy?
Oh, look, I'd like a pie or two, but there's a big difference between enjoying that occasionally and having a diet that's structured around the sorts of food that are devoid of what I'm talking about, pungency, stimulating a sense of warmth in the body, which in turn converts into improved resistance, particularly to wintertime infections. I also quickly mentioned that vitamin C needs to be optimised these days, particularly in wintertime. I'm a great fan of vitamin C. I mentioned last time, Mark, you would have heard me say it, that vitamin C is considered with still a degree of scepticism by the mainstream, despite the fact that it was Dr. Linus Pauling years ago that put forward the hypothesis that optimum doses of vitamin C had a marked effect on improving resistance to infection And that has been carried out by many medical practitioners successfully, but certainly by members of the herbal medicine camp. If you're not using a vitamin C supplement at present, go to your pharmacy or health food store and get hold of that. And then I also spoke about the, or attempted to speak, about the importance of one of my old favourites. It used to be very favourite, or very much a favourite, and that's the old cod liver oil.
Ooh.
I know, but look, we were raised on it. Yeah. And if you go back a couple of generations in medicine, it was a very standby supplement to use, particularly with elderly people who had compromised respiratory systems. Cod liver oil with a great deal of vitamin A in it, a great deal of vitamin D in it. I consider it one of the best tonic remedies, particularly for the lungs, for the bronchial system, strengthens the system. And I contend that the old style medical practitioner that generations ago would have prescribed it at the height of respiratory disease, they're onto something. If you're not using cod liver oil, I contend it would be a good thing to think about. And then,
what about in doses? I mean, what would a dose of that look like?
Okay. Look, dosage is always something that's indicated on the package that you're going to use. The moment I give out a dose, someone will purchase a bottle or a packet of capsules and say, well, Dennis said this and this doesn't cover. Wait, your pharmacist is probably the best to advise you on this. I have a great deal of regard for pharmacists. I'm glad they're coming into their own. They're a beaut group of health practitioners, not just retailers of drugs. And go to your pharmacist, talk to him about a dosage, a recommended dosage of cod liver oil for you, and talk to him about your condition that you're using it for, quite apart from its general tonic use.
Do you reckon as we sort of look at some of these old preparations and things that you would say sadly have kind of fallen away a little bit, have we just become more too sophisticated for our own good?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had a very, very educated lady in to see me yesterday from Africa, and she is absolutely stunned at the way in which the Australian population that she's had a lot to do with has become, if you like, less self-reliant than what you would expect, that everything now is seen to be curable from a drug or from a prescribed medication or from a visit to the doctor. Now, I'm not opposed to any of that. It would be foolish for anyone to interpret that. But your point is valid. What has happened is, in my opinion, and I've got to say that, we've become too soft. We've become too soft and we've lost some of the early skills that our forebears had of looking after things at the domestic level, using the doctor and the pharmacist when it was obvious they were to be used, but not like today. Johnny gets a sniffle, whereas in previous generations that would have been handled in the house with a bit of Fry's balsam, maybe a bit of cod liver oil supplement, a day in bed, much to the joy of Johnny, and he'd be up and around. Mm. These days it's ring the doctor, and the child is likely to be experiencing a mild viral infection, which has panicked the parent, who has never been raised, unfortunately, to believe that these things that were handled previously very successfully at the household level now need to be managed at a medical level.
More of that as we trek through the hour with Dennison Health Naturally. Good afternoon, Charles at East Maitland. You have a question on multivitamins for older gents. What's the story? What's your question there, Charles?
It's just I would like Dennis, if he can, to recommend a multivitamin for... I'm 68 years of age and still very active, but I'm feeling that a multivitamin might help me even more.
Okay. And look, I think that's a very good question. When I was at university, we studied the use of vitamins and minerals, and the development of our discussion was that particularly in the context of a modern Western lifestyle, the value of vitamin and mineral supplementation could be justified. Now, if that could be justified across the board, in my opinion, it's even more justifiable when we're talking about people like myself that are in the ageing, and I would say ageing rapidly, group of people. I believe that vitamins and minerals, taken sensibly, do help the body fight, resist infection, maintain vitality, if we want to use that forgotten term. Now, what I would say with reference to your question is this. There are numerous preparations of vitamins and minerals, particularly for older people. What I would suggest, Charles, is that you take on board what I have said. You go to your pharmacist, you say you've had a discussion with me on radio, and Dennis has suggested that I talk to your pharmacist to give me a recommendation as to what is a good brand, a comprehensive group of vitamins and minerals, and a brand that is relative to my age bracket. This will put you in the hands of professional advice and management rather than my suggesting something on radio. Talk to the professional. The idea of using a multivitamin and a multimineral, I applaud you for thinking of that. I think it's an aspect that's been forgotten in mainstream medicine. Take my advice. Go and have a yarn with your pharmacist. There are many of these on the shelves. Pharmacies stock very good representations of what you're looking for.
All right, best of luck with everything, Charles, as we continue a little bit more of Health Naturally. Good afternoon, Robert at Stockton. You have a question on Korean ginseng. What's the story, Robert?
Yeah, that's correct. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Hello, Robert.
Just a quick one, mate. I went to the herbologist the other day, and I remember you saying there's a certain percentage of Korean ginseng you need to be in a product to sort of work effectively, or around about that amount, you know?
Yes.
And I'm just wondering what that might be, sir.
Okay. Mm. My response to that, Robert, would be depending upon what form of Korean ginseng they were using. Now, you're talking there about a combination incorporating Korean ginseng, are you?
Oh, I think it just had Korean ginseng just on the bottle there, so
okay.
I think it would. Yeah.
Okay.
It was Vitology at Wall's End, actually.
Yeah, okay. They stock good products. The reason I'm asking this is that the way in which the herb is processed usually determines the dosage. Now, with Korean ginseng, it is popularly prescribed, as you would appreciate, in Asia, in North Asia, in China in particular, but it's cultivated very successfully today in Korea. If you're using the dried herb, that really sets the pace for the dosage of other preparations based on the dried herb. So if you're using an extract of Korean ginseng, that may be four times stronger than what is in the actual dried herb, because the dried herb has been so concentrated that it has been concentrated to a level beyond what is normally in the dried herb. So it's a difficult question to answer without looking at brands, and I'm not permitted to do that. I'm happy to answer the question for you, but I'll just say for listeners' sake, the form of Korean ginseng you take should indicate how it is processed, whether it is the dried ginseng, whether it is an extract of ginseng, or whether it is a concentrate of ginseng. All those determine what is the product you're using and what level of dosage you should be used. Now, I have a lot of information on Korean ginseng, Robert. What I'm going to suggest you do is contact my rooms, and I'll be happy to talk to you and give you a dosage for it consistent with the preparation you're talking about. It all comes back, as I keep saying on this program, that if one is going to use herbal medicine sensibly, and I'm sure you are, there are some parameters that have to be taken on board. These things are not just little retail entities that you purchase because they look nice on the shelf. They're not just, if you like, an alternative to a vitamin, good as vitamins are. I'm a great supporter of them. These are potentially very worthwhile and active medicinal substances. And like all medicinal substances, regardless of what the manufacturer or the promoter might say, they need to be taken in a dose consistent with the literature that governs their usage in professional circles. So rather than just shoot from the hip, so to speak, I will give you more accurate information as to the dosage that you should be taking and whether that coincides with the preparation you are taking. Okay. By the way, I applaud you for using Korean ginseng. I would like to think that I've had a bit to do on this program in promoting what I consider to be one of the three important anti-aging remedies.
Okay, Dennis, I've heard you talk about it many times on your program, and I've never rung up before, and I thought, I was there the other day, and I thought, I'll give Dennis a ring, but, mate, I'll make an appointment and come into your shop there at Lanton, and, I've heard you talk about it many times, and I thought, I might inquire about it.
Well, you get on to it. Both my wife and myself take it, and each one of us is 120 years of age, and I'm only joking.
good luck with all of that. All right, good afternoon, Peter from Lemon Tree Passage. You're with Dennis here, Peter.
Hi, Dennis, how are you?
I'm well, Peter, how are you?
Good, thanks. I have bladder cancer.
Yes.
What can I take for it?
Well, if you have bladder cancer, obviously you're being managed by your doctor and your urologist.
Mm.
Okay. If you're being managed by them, anything that this system might be able to offer to it would be purely supportive and should only be utilised in conjunction with what is being given to you or what you're undertaking from your medical managers. I will say this, and you can pass this on to your medical managers. And by the way, I know nothing about the level of bladder cancer that you're experiencing or whether this information is relative to it. But you would have heard me talk on the program about one of the most important herbs used in Southeast Asia for kidney and bladder conditions, and that is the herb known as Java kidney tea. It is
how do you spell it?
J-A-V-A, Java. Java is a part of Indonesia. The herb...
Java kidney tea.
It's also known as kumis kucing, which is the Indonesian or Malaysian way of pronouncing it, made famous in the West by the Dutch, who, when they were colonisers of Indonesia, got to observe the way in which Java kidney tea was used successfully by the ethnic population, by the natural population there, for many conditions of the kidney and bladder. And they took it back to Europe, where it is called up in the European Pharmacopoeia, and recommendations are made for its use. It could be useful to discuss with your medical managers. Look it up, Google it. There might be some supportive possibility.
Java kidney tea.
Java kidney tea, it is known. Orthosiphon stamineus is its botanical name. Kumis kucing is its ethnic name. A very useful herb, which I have used professionally for many years now, as far as I'm concerned. I've been probably the first in this country to harness its benefits and have done so for over 10 years, particularly to address people with what we would call the failing kidney, where I've found it useful.
G'day, Isabel at Raymond Terrace. You have a question of the tongue for Dennis today, Isabel.
Yes. So I have a friend, very good friend of mine, who's currently going through cancer.
Yes.
It's been diagnosed as stage 4 cancer. It started, I don't know exactly what it is, it started off with a lesion in her tongue. Mm. They removed a portion of her tongue. It kind of just went like wildfire after that, spread everywhere. And she's at a point where she wants to look at alternatives. She's gone through chemo. She's done two rounds of chemo. She has had many complications through that and has had many setbacks. And I've, been encouraging her to do some other alternatives and just wondering what you have or what guidance or what suggestions you may have. I know you had a previous caller talking about he had a bladder cancer.
Yes.
If that was probably more specific to that.
Yes.
But yeah.
Look, this is not an easy question to respond to, Isabel. What I do know is that there are a number of centres and a number of doctors, probably best known as integrative medical practitioners, who are more competent to address this problem than what persons such as myself are able to do. If your friend has got stage 4, that's a pretty awesome task to deal with.
Mm,
but
yeah.
I would be suggesting that you talk to your GP or talk to a medical advisory centre and ask for the names of centres, usually in Sydney, that practice, if you like, a complementary medicine or a broader based system of medicine that is sometimes useful for impacting on cancer as such. I think that's the way that I would be going, not an easy pathway to do, but you've got a better chance of getting the sort of response that you're looking for by touching base with organisations in Sydney that specialise in it, and I can't mention names, but they'd be well known, and I would be having a discussion with your doctor, asking for the names of some of these centres, some of the medical specialists and practitioners that offer, if you like, a complementary medical approach as well as the mainstream. I would caution you, Isabel, about too readily thinking that anyone that puts up their hand is fair dinkum in their ability to help you. Unfortunately, in the unregistered systems of medicine, there are a lot of people that, and I've seen this, so I can speak from example, there are a number of people that put up their hand because they know at the end of the day there's a quid to be made by
lots of money.
And I could write a book on the sad cases of people that have consulted me and have not listened to what I've said and then spent literally thousands of dollars on failed cancer management from overseas.
Yeah. Now,
and also be cautious of systems of herbal medicine that are not well defined. Now, I will not elaborate on that, but if one is going to use Western herbal medicine in any way, there is a vast body of modern literature these days that gives indications, side effects, and what to expect as far as supporting the patient's immunology and giving the patient that additional ability to fight the condition. That's the way to go. Talk to a medical practitioner, express your concern, get the name of well-known clinics in Sydney, one in particular, and go down that pathway.
And only in Sydney? Like, do you know of any?
I'm not saying there aren't any in Newcastle, but from what I understand, there are one or two in Sydney that are outstanding. And they would be well known.
What about the IV vitamin C?
Look, It was popular years ago. I'm sceptical of it. I never saw in my own experience patients with cancer resolving their cancer with it, despite the fact that one practitioner that I knew very well was administering the preparation, particularly to patients with cancer. I would be sceptical. I'm not trying to be put you off. All I'm saying is be cautious about treatments that are expensive, ongoing, and at the end of the day, maybe often not much at all.
Health Naturally with Dennis Stewart on 2NURFM 103.7. A little bit more of Health Naturally with Dennis Stewart. Only time for a little bit more. G'day, Pat from East Maitland. You have a question on cod liver oil. What's the story, Pat?
Ah, okay, cod liver oil. As a child,
yes.
I'm now 82 years of age.
Good on you.
But as a child, we were given Scott's emulsion.
Yes, yes.
Which the emulsion was much more pleasant to take, much more pleasant to take than the oil.
Now we're getting somewhere.
And now I think it was taken off the market due to the high. I'm not sure why, but it was taken off the market, I believe, due to, just wondering, is there a story to that? Can we get it anywhere? Or?
Well, again here, I'm not familiar with the brands there are. When I was a child, and I'm exactly the same age as you, by the way, congratulations.
Oh, and to you.
We're not doing too badly, are we?
No, I'm not actually.
We were a genre of kids that grew up the right way, in my opinion, and all were fed on various preparations of cod liver oil. The one that we were famous for having every Friday night was Hypol, H-Y-P-O-L, and I can still smell it.
But we'd have to line up.
If we did, but I tell you what, I bless the advent of that product because we were never sick.
Yeah.
We were never sick.
Yeah.
And I think I'm entitled to say, as an old man, I have watched many generations of kids come along, and I believe ours was probably the healthiest.
Yeah.
And whereas today, due to lifestyle factors and a lot of poor dietary situations, yeah, kids are being very compromised. But yeah, again, I'll have a look to see if I can find Scott's emulsion for you.
Yes.
Contact your local pharmacy. I said earlier.
I did that, and that's where I bought the oil.
Yes.
But I've only had a couple of doses of it, just as your the gentleman there with you on radio went, ah. Yeah. Oh.
Okay. Well, look, you get
all sounds filthy, horrible stuff. And I even looked up, Dennis, the other one that you mentioned then, which was Hypol. That's got a cod liver oil in it too.
That's what I mean.
That's it. But much more pleasant to take.
Stick with it. Look, I'll have a talk with our dear pharmacist at West Cessnock Pharmacy, a great group of people that know a lot.
Dennis, I'm not sure, but I think it had something to do with the high content of vitamin A for children, but I'm not sure what may have been taken. I really can't confirm that.
I will check with that.
And just quickly, I know it's time to go, but just quickly, I've been diagnosed with macular degeneration. Now, that's all right.
Yes.
But, and it's the one that's no treatment for.
Yes.
And I said, well, what do I do? I said to the optometrist, what's the best thing I can do? And he said, eat a lot of oily fish.
Yes.
What else did he say? Leafy green vegetable.
Yes.
And leafy green vegetable and nuts.
Yes, and look, we could go through each of those and see the rationale associated with them. That's very, very good advice. What I would do, however, is augment it by saying that in our literature, two herbs, bilberry and ginkgo biloba, are called up specifically for macular degeneration and diabetic retinopathy. It might be worthwhile talking to your optometrist about that. But if I had that condition, that's what I would be using as well.
I'm sorry, could you just repeat those two herbs?
Yes. Bilberry.
Yes.
And ginkgo biloba.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, appreciate it, Pat, and indeed everybody else that rang in today. Dennis, the hourglass has got us, mate. You run out of time, sorry.
Oh, well, we did our best.
But you'll continue this next week, and hopefully by the time you get through this topic, winter will
have... It'll be great. Winter. Some good questions today, difficult ones, and one is always limited on what one can say, and I empathise with those dear people that are struggling against cancer in any form. Our family has been through it, and, I wish you all the best and God's blessing.
There he is, the outsider himself, Dennis Stewart, back next Friday from midday with another Health and Naturally. Have a great week, mate. Talk to you next time.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.